you hear me okay?
Yes, is this Joe?
Yes, it is.
How are you doing, Joe?
Good, who is this?
Paul McKay.
Hey, welcome. I guess you are officially the first one, so.
Okay.
So I guess we can chat until somebody else comes on, so it's a couple minutes before we officially start, so.
All right.
So where are you from, Paul?
Actually, I live in St. Charles, Illinois. I understand you're down in Aurora.
I actually was. I was really in Batavia for about 20 months. My son lived there. He has now moved back to Colorado. But I was there. I live in New Orleans, and I was evacuated for about 20 months a few years ago. So I still keep my Aurora cell phone because we learned through evacuations that you want an out-of-state cell phone, so I still have that one.
Okay.
And I use it as a business backup phone, so.
Oh, sure. Believe me, I spent 34 years in the Air Force. So
you know where everything is everywhere, right?
Well, I also spent 30 years flying for American.
Oh, so then you really know. I do a lot of traveling now for my work, and so I've learned to fly the friendly skies, or not so friendly some days, so.
Well, that's for certain. But it's my mother-in-law who has the Alzheimer's.
Okay.
And so I'm just, and she is in a wonderful care facility back in Meadville, Pennsylvania, just about 30 miles south of Erie.
Okay, well, I'm very Pennsylvania challenged, but I'm going to be doing some speaking engagements in Pennsylvania in September, I think it is, and I'm going to be in, I think it's Hatboro and somewhere else that isn't too far from there, so.
Okay. Yeah,
Diane Crouch, Ombudsman Coordinator, Shreveport, Louisiana.
Hi, Diane.
Hey.
We're just talking while people are coming on.
Oh.
So I heard somebody else ring in.
Okay.
Yeah. My name is Marshall Jackson. I'm out of San Antonio.
Oh, Marshall, Facebook told me to say happy birthday to you today.
Who is this, Joe?
Yes, it is.
I am very happy to be talking with you.
Well, thank you.
Birthday present. How's that?
Yeah. Well, we'll hope that works out that way.
Oh, I'm sure that it will.
So, well, according to my BlackBerry, we still have one more minute, and then I'm going to go ahead and get started, and people can just ring in, so.
Where are you, Joe? Colorado?
I am actually in Colorado. I'm spending the summer in Colorado. It's a tough thing to do when one lives in New Orleans, Louisiana, to have to spend the summer in Colorado, so.
Yes, I understand how tough that can be.
Yeah, you're in Texas, so you could probably stand a little Colorado about now, too.
Where in Colorado, Joe?
I'm in the Denver metro area. I'm literally out in Parker. It's where my children live. And so I actually have quarters in my son's house that I'm able to stay in. And so they said, why don't you come summer in Colorado? And I said, I think I can do that because as long as I have a telephone or an airport and a computer, I can pretty much do my work. So it works for me.
Yeah, that's just off the Beltway on Route 83, right?
It might be. I get some of the older highways mixed up. It's definitely off of I-25.
Yeah.
So even though I lived in Colorado, way more years than I could be old enough to have. I still don't always know all the roads because in Colorado you don't learn things by roads. You know, it's the thing over by the thing that used to be there that's not there anymore. So, at any rate, that's country talk because I'm from Colorado country. So, okay, well, the bell says that it's time to get started, so I'm going to go ahead and get started. And I'll just talk about a few housekeeping things first. And I really, because I'm very new at using the conferencing as the moderator, I'm on tons of conference calls and I'm always interviewed on conference calls and I attend a lot of teleseminars. This is really the first time that I am doing this myself, and I'm really excited about it, but I'm not sure I understand it so well. So just to begin with, the only way I could sign up to be sure that I didn't get cut off is I signed up for it to be an hour and a half. I really only planned for it to be an hour long. I'm not sure that I'll always, I might have to mute you depending on the background noise, so I'm not sure that I can always take questions, but I'm hoping that there'll be a question time at the end. So, as those of you who received the invitations know, the name of this is Enjoy Your Time with a Person with a Debilitating Disease such as Alzheimer's. And the reason that I bring this up, and I talked about it a little bit in the invitation, is certainly not to minimize the devastation of this disease or any disease, but once we have it in our family, once it's been diagnosed, once we know that we have to deal with it, whether it's because we've gotten it ourselves, and there's a good possibility, I'll have some people on the line that do have it themselves, there are some on my mailing list, or whether we're dealing with it as a spouse or a child or sometimes even a parent of an early onset person, whether we're, you know, dealing with it as a family or a friend or even a paid or professional caregiver, I think what we always hear is how horrible and how devastating it is. And while that's true, I haven't heard of a disease that isn't devastating. So once you know, once you're there, what I've spent a great deal of the last 25 years where I, as a second career, have specifically worked with people with Alzheimer's or a related disorder, what I've spent the time doing is trying to find ways that you can get through it. And then as time progressed, I really started finding ways that you could more than get through it, that you can start focusing on the abilities rather than the disabilities, and find some ways that you can really enjoy your time together. And I didn't know how to do this. In my own career, the reason that I got started in it, and in my, I do have several books, but in my book, which is about the 10 absolutes called Alzheimer's Disease, Help and Hope, in that book I tell the story of how I got started, and it was based on a neighbor friend and very important person in my early developmental life and actually through my life and until his death, he and his wife, they were really important people to me. And I saw that devastation and I saw how people didn't know how to deal with it. And we're talking about really the olden days then, way back from the early 1950s, clear until his death, which was in 1971. And so I had a real reason to figure out what this was that he had, and we believe it was Alzheimer's, and I had a real reason to do something about it. And the things that I wanted to do was help the families and help the caregivers, because he had to go into a care setting in 1971, and in 1971 there really wasn't any kind of a care setting, particularly in rural Colorado where we were, where anyone knew what to do with him at all other than honestly to be afraid of him. So I had a real reason to go into it, had worked in it for a really long time. If we fast forward all the way to the year 2001, when I realized that there was something wrong with my own mother. We hadn't had any kind of dementia in our family, and we'd had a lot of people that had lived to be quite elderly. And so for me to have somebody in my own family, I didn't think that was going to happen. I was obviously the one that should take care of my mom. And what I found out there was that, you know, even though I had all these things and I knew all these things and I'd worked so hard helping to help people get through all of this, that when it became my own, it gave me a whole different way of looking at it. And I also have a book about that, and it's called Don't Leave Mama Home with the Dog. And that's the story of my mom and I and how we worked through that. And I would just love to tell you that I figured out how to enjoy the time together while we were doing it. And probably, honestly, even being hard on myself, 80% of the time we really did. But I think it was the benefit of that experience for me to be able to work with my mom and learn from my mistakes as the caregiver. before I spent time, years, over 20 years, helping people make the hard decisions of putting someone in long-term care, because I worked as a nursing home administrator, I worked as an assisted living executive director, and I had helped people make the decisions when they couldn't take care any longer. I'd helped people in support groups. I actually ran support groups through the Alzheimer's Association for over 16 years. I had really helped people, but only when it was my very own person, even beyond the friend for whom I became interested in it, did I realize that there were so many other factors that were involved. And so, since I couldn't change it, what I've really tried to do is look back on that experience and use that to actually learn more and do more. And I feel like it gives me the right maybe to talk to you as caregivers. Now, clearly not as spouses. I still haven't dealt with that as a spouse, and so I don't know that I can deal with that. But I feel like some of those things can be very helpful with you, though, even as a spouse. So I really want to share this with you, and people have been asking me for a really long time. I'll go back and tell you just a little bit more history. I had been doing speaking and training and had developed my 10 absolutes in 1996. And certainly if any of you want the 10 absolutes, you can, and if you don't have it, you can go to my website, and it's alzheimersadvocate.com, or you can just Google Joe Huey, and it J-O space H-U-E-Y, and it'll take you to my website. But at any rate, I had been teaching people, working with Alzheimer's, working in long-term care, as I explained, and people would come up to me always after I would give presentations and say, you know, where's your written material? We'd like to get that written material. And so eventually, it took me clear from 1996 to 2001, I finally wrote the first book and really never marketed it that much. I've just really used it when I was speaking or when somebody would ask for my work. And so then the second book I actually wrote because I felt like I could really help get some information out there. People have been asking me probably that long, so maybe since 1996 and beyond, people have really been asking me, you know, what else do you have? And many, many, many families have called me, and I talk to them by phone, and I email with them, and I follow up with them, and in the greater New Orleans area, I go to their houses, and I do all kinds of things. I did when I was in Illinois. I worked with a whole bunch of people, too. And people would keep coming back to me, and people would keep saying things like, well, you know, what can we do for you, or can we purchase things from you? And I often gave my books away, but I also sold some books. And so I feel like people have been asking me for a really long time to start doing some things like teleseminars and some things like this, and I just hadn't gotten around to doing it. So today is my very first day to start out and do that, and while I always feel like, and I always have helped families for free, a lot of people really don't want me to do it for free. So while this isn't a sales pitch, at the very end of it, I am going to tell you a way that you can be on a support group that I'm creating and the way that you can contact me and do some other things that are available. And it will be on a website, and you can, and I can email you all that stuff. I don't want to talk about it today because I really want to talk about the things and give you a really good program about the things that I talk about here in the invitation. So that's a whole lot about me. Took up a little bit of time there, but sometimes I think everyone wants to know where those things come from, and I usually start out that way. So now I'd really like to get into the real program. And again, enjoy your time with a person with a debilitating disease such as Alzheimer's. And the things that I promised in the program, the first one was what to do next, a plan, the steps to follow to prepare. Now, in the invitation, it started out by saying it's bad news, you feared that it's come true, and I talked about that because I know that there were a lot of people that have been wanting me to do a teleseminar on when you get the diagnosis or when you finally get the diagnosis. However, I also know from experience that there are going to be quite a few of you on here who already have the diagnosis and have had the diagnosis for a long time, and in the presentations that I do all over the country, the other thing I find out is there are people who never really get a diagnosis. And I'll share with you, with my own mother, even though I knew pretty much what was wrong with her, I waited 3 or 4 years before I actually had the workup done to really get the real diagnosis. So, if you have that set of things that are going on where it seems like your communication just isn't working anymore, clearly the person that you care about, it, or you know yourself, if it's you that yourself that feels that you have the diseases on the line, when you're having those problems where you just really can't keep track of things, it needs to be severe enough, as you already know, that it's adversely affecting the ability to get along in everyday life. So whether you've gone and gotten the diagnosis, whether you're waiting to get the diagnosis, whether you're clearly and actively, like many of us do, avoiding getting a diagnosis because you just don't want to do it, then what you really need to do next in those situations is it's really important to be sure that you get your financial and legal house in order. That is such an important step, and it's one that people often don't use and don't do. And the earlier the better, because you can get the person, particularly on your early onset ones, the people can actually be able to participate in making some of their own decisions. Now, there are always going to be people that don't want to make decisions. There are always going to be people that don't really want to face things and really don't want to talk about it. And so you'll know who those people are, and sometimes it doesn't hurt to ask anyway. You might be surprised that somebody really might be glad that you break the ice and say, you know, I've noticed that you're having some problems. And it just depends on the relationship. It depends on where they're at. But what you need to make sure as soon as possible is that you get your financial and legal house in order, because you need to plan. And you need to be able to plan for an illness that's probably going to last a long time. And I'm going to say it over and over, and then I'll say it over again. This is a kind of thing that you can't do all by yourself. You can't do it without help. And that's something that everybody really seems to want to do. Somebody is the primary caregiver, sometimes by default, sometimes because nobody else wants to do it. In my case, it was like, well, this was my bailiwick. This was what I did. Even though, if you really think about that, they tell doctors not to treat their own family. They tell mechanics not to work on their own cars. So maybe I wasn't the right person to do it. But at any rate, some of us get to do it by default. Some of us just determine that we're the ones. But you do become very protective. But back to the plan. You need to be sure, and it's just like getting your legal and financial house in order has to do with everything, even insurance. You don't want to go get a diagnosis if you haven't looked into long-term care insurance yet. You don't want to get a diagnosis if you haven't done your power of attorney and made some of those decisions. Because once you have a diagnosis, then it's going to change the way those things work. And I'm not telling you to do something illegal. I'm just saying that it's important for you to look into all of that stuff when things are early. If it's too late, it's too late, and that's the way it works, and so that can't be your step. But it's always one if you're early on. So you want to have a plan. In the plan, I have just some steps, and you don't really need to write these down, because you'll all receive a recording of this tomorrow. If you signed in or signed up for this, you'll receive a recording. I'll also send an email out to my mailing list for people that missed it, so you can get a recording. So if you just want to listen and not take down notes, it's really up to you. But the first thing on my plan is you want to get information. And a good place to start with information certainly is the Internet. The Alzheimer's Association has amazing information, and Again, sometimes you get too many hits, so you can go to ALZ.org and get a lot of information there. The other thing that you want to do is you need to talk out your fears. Now, you may be able to talk out your fears with the person that is the person that you're concerned about, or if you're concerned yourself with the person that is the most significant or the person that you would trust to be your power of attorney. And it may not be in the place that you can do that. Now, interestingly enough, my mom and I were able to talk about many of the things, and I didn't really know to talk out those fears, but one of the things that she told me, and Mom didn't like to make decisions. My dad always made decisions, and then after my dad died of cancer, I usually made the decisions for my mom because she would ask me to help her with things, and I was the classic person to do it, mostly because I worked in aging, not because I didn't have other siblings. So one of the things that I knew was her real serious fear. This I knew for sure. She didn't like to be alone. And the other thing that she told me often, she told me probably within the last couple months before her death in a very lucid moment, she said, I don't want anybody to ever remember me as an addled old woman. And to her, that meant somebody who doesn't know what's going on. And do you know, most people had no idea that there was anything wrong with her, even though in her later stages, she didn't usually know any of us. But just because of her nature and because of the things we were able to form around her, most people didn't know that there was anything really wrong with her. So we were able to work that out. So it's important to talk out those fears or to go back to the things that people, you know about people. Now, my mom was never a person that was even particularly concerned about intelligence. She was just always concerned about being a really nice person. And so I was pretty surprised when she said that to me, but it was something that was important to her. So there's the fears that you have about what people's going to think about your loved one, and it's the fears that people have themselves. This isn't with just this disease. It's with any other disease. I think most people have great fears about being a burden, and most people have great fears about somebody talking about them and having pity and things like that. So you really want to just, and it's important to write some of those things down because some days you're going to need to look at them. Then talk about best and worst scenarios. Now, what I have down here that I've actually written down and something for you is, what if you can't talk about this stuff? What if they're just not the kind of people that you can talk with? Well, then hopefully you have a friend, and you're going to need a friend and a confidant to get through this. So hopefully you'll have someone that you can talk to about these kinds of things, someone that you're not going to feel guilty or like you're talking about somebody behind their back. And if not, have a talk with yourself. Now, you know, we laugh a lot about, and we have said ever since I can remember, there's been this saying, you don't have to worry too much if you're talking to yourself. It's only when you start answering yourself. Well, I started saying a long time ago, listen, I answer myself because if I answer myself, that way I know I get the answer I want. So I'm telling you that if you don't have anybody else to talk to, then discuss some of these things with yourself. Think about what is the worst scenario. What is the best scenario? What do you think somebody would or wouldn't want as they went through this journey? What do you want? And most important of all, is decide what is really important. And one of the ways to do that is imagine if this were the last day of your life, what things would be really important? Through life, we learned all of these things, or certainly in my life, I learned how to do the 5-year plan, so you always plan things ahead. And then something that would help you get out of anxiety or to stop worrying about things or how to face something that was really difficult I always use the idea, and I often use this in raising my own children, where I would say, you know, we have a 5-year plan, so let's think about if we, in 5 years, if we looked back at this day or this emergency or this crisis or this thing that seems to have us all so stressed out, would it matter? Would we really remember at all? So keeping that in mind, and then also, and this is something that you really can write down and look at it often. If this is the last day of your life, or this is the last day of the life of the person for whom you care about, how important would some things be? And I think at that stage, it helps you get back into reality. Am I saying, no, you don't ever have to eat, and you don't have to go to the doctor, and you just need to get some sleep sometime, and people really do need to have a bath when they think have already taken them, and all of those things that are so common, yes, they need to be taken care of. But they probably don't all need to be taken care of by you. That's one of the ways you can get help. And as I said before, and I'll say again, you can't do this without help. You need help every step of the way. One of the first ways that I told you to get help is to get the legal information. Make sure that you have the financial things in place. Get information about the disease. And don't worry so much about the stages, but get information about what resources are out there, because that's all getting help. And then figure out what to do, figure out what's important, and get help, either talking it out with each other if that's possible, or talking it out with a friend, or talking to yourself, or writing it down on paper and reading it if you don't want to talk to yourself. And then make a list of the things that are really important. We have the funny movie out here called Bucket List, and I know so many people have a list that they keep of things I want to do before I die. So this is the same kind of thing, and I love to use analogies, as you can already see, and any of you that have heard me speak, I really do use a lot of analogies. So make this what is really important, so that on the days when you feel like things are just hopeless or helpless, one of the best ways to figure out how to enjoy things, and I know Mom and I used to do this, sometimes I even did this on work days. When things get really, really difficult, when things get really out of control, I would just sit down and say, you know what, this is too much trouble, let's have a holiday. Now, I was working full time. I was actually working in 24-hour care. I was actually working with Alzheimer's people. Many, many people depended on me. But do you know, sometimes if we just stopped what we were trying to do, whether it was get someplace on time or do something that wasn't going to work, or take the dog for a walk and Mom wanted to go and I just wanted to hurry and do it myself, or something really little or something really big, like trying to get to the airport or trying to get through security, you know, if you just stop and say, how important is it? I think you will truly be surprised at giving up, throwing your hands up, asking how we got here, saying, I don't know how this happened. Often, as I say, apologize, 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 even if you haven't done anything wrong. It really can make such a difference. And it's not really magic, though it feels like magic. What it really does is it helps you get back on track. It helps break the state of a cycle, of a downward spiral that's just making life so miserable. And it helps you laugh. Now, the thing that Mom and I used all the time was she loved ice cream. I never even honestly cared much about ice cream. She loved ice cream, and so with me, many of the talks that I give, people even laugh about me being the ice cream lady. I didn't care if it was 7 o'clock in the morning and we were having a bad morning. I would just throw up my hand, say, you know what, this isn't going to work. Let's just stop. Let's start over. Let's have a holiday. Let's have ice cream. Many times Mom would say, can we have ice cream for breakfast? I'd say, you bet we can. So we'd just have some ice cream. Now, the funny part of that story is, as Mom's ability to eat declined, she ate less and less ice cream, and I just want you to know I ate more and more ice cream. I still haven't kicked the ice cream habit yet, so I still use that, and food sometimes can even be a comfort. So going back to all of those things with the plan, I've spent a lot of time on what to do next, a plan, the steps to follow, and how to prepare. And I want to wrap that section up with, accept the fact that you must have and get help. There are many ways to get help. There are those people, and the Alzheimer's Association had a pamphlet that I used to carry around. I'm assuming they still have it. I don't carry them around much anymore. And it's 9 things, I believe, is what it said on it, that you can do for a family or a person who has Alzheimer's disease. Now, how to ask for help with successful results is what's next on my list. I used to tell people to carry those pamphlets around, and whenever somebody said, because invariably this happens, whenever somebody said, they said, I wish there's something that I could do to help. What you could do if you weren't willing or able to ask for help is you could hand them this pamphlet and say, there are some things on here, and I could mention a few of them that would be helpful to me. Another thing, as I talked about with the, whether it's self-imposed or whether it's by default, sometimes I know there are families who always say, you know, I wish I weren't an only child, and the other families will laugh and say, well, you should wish you were. And then there are those that say, again, you know, my siblings won't help me. All they'll do is criticize. So even then, that's a way that you can ask for help and get some results. The biggest thing that happens with caregivers is, and it's a sign that you're burned out. So if you have it, it is that sign. Or if you know someone that's a caregiver and you're listening to help them out and they do this, is as a caregiver, you start thinking that you're the only one that can take care of people like this, because you're filling in for a lot of things and you're helping hide a lot of things. And so, often, even when people do offer help, we have a hard time taking that help. Or when they do help, we don't accept the way that they do it. Or we're not sure that they can do it. And sometimes we feel so protective that we're truly afraid that they'll figure out that they're really worse than you want somebody to think they are. Or that they're going to come back to you and tell you that they're really worse. So that's where I brought in who to tell and exactly what to say. You know, even after I had my mom evaluated to this very day, and she died almost 4 years ago, do you know the workup that we got and the written papers that said she couldn't be alone and she had to have 24-hour care, all of the things that showed where her deficits were? I had a huge workup program that was done through a hospital that I took her to in New Orleans. Do you know, I never, ever showed that to anybody, not even my siblings. Was that right? Probably not. But you know what? When I kept in mind that she didn't want to be considered an adult old woman, I don't know why. I guess I was just afraid if they read how many deficits she had, that somehow that would make her feel addled. So there's that protective part. And the reason I'm confessing that is often you may not want to tell people what's wrong. And often you don't get help because you're afraid that they'll find out what's wrong. And I just think it's really important for you to understand that you don't have to tell. And that goes back to what's important. What are your fears? What are the best and what are the worst? But you can still ask for help. So what you may want to do is you may want to get professional help. There's companion care services. There's day centers. There's all kinds of things that you can do that you get professional help so that you get a break, because you need a break. And then you can ask family or friends to do all kinds of things. Maybe chip in for that help if you are not sure how you can afford it, or have them just do something with you. And so there are different ways to protect, and we can talk about a lot of other things in that. A look at the future. Very often, and I certainly did this myself, I determined that I could take care of Mom, and I was always going to take care of Mom, and no matter how tired I got or no matter what we were doing, I could do everything. Even though I had been telling people for years that they needed to get help, I felt like I could do everything. Now, I did take her to daycare every day, but I did that because I needed to be able to go to work. However, I had many resources that were available because of the kind of work I did, that she could have gone to one of the houses that I ran. I ran group homes, which was what I did for my work at that time in New Orleans, group homes for people with dementia. She could have gone on the bus from the day center. They had people that came from those group homes. She knew them. They were her friends. She could have gone to the bus, on the bus to the center. But I worked it into my busy schedule every day to go pick her up. And then, rather than let her be at the homes, which would have been fine, I wouldn't have had to do it for free. She had long-term care insurance. I could have even paid my own company. Even though I was the director, I could have done it either way. I never even considered that. I actually took her home, or I took her with me to do the things that I was doing, because I felt like I needed to be the one that did everything. Now, you can imagine that that really started wearing on me and on my health and on my ability to have a life and to have a quality of life. But what I talk about in my book, Don't Leave Mom Home with the Dog, the other thing in doing that I really didn't think about very much because I was so concerned about being her caregiver and being the perfect caregiver and being everything for her, is I didn't really consider her and how she felt in that. At the time, I was still running two support groups. Now, one of the daytime support groups that I ran was during the hours that she was at the day center. But one of them was an evening support group, and she always went to that support group with me. She always sat right there in the support group with me. And one night when we were going home from the support group, she looked at me in a very lucid moment. She always sat and she enjoyed the people, and they knew her name, and they were nice to her, and we always had coffee and cookies, and she loved that. And so, I mean, she enjoyed the time, or so I thought. But as we were riding home in the car, she looked over at me and she said, "You know, sometimes when we're in that group with those nice people, I feel like they're talking about people just like me." I could have wrecked the car. I felt so surprised. But I also realized that in trying to take her with me and be with me all the time, that I wasn't thinking about how she felt and I wasn't thinking about what she needed. So my answer to that was I actually hired a lady whom she knew who worked for me to start coming for, it was once a month, it wasn't a big deal. But I started having that lady come and sat with Mom that night. It was the very first time I ever left her alone in the evening and didn't take her along. And when that lady came the first night, I was so worried, and I'd called to order pizza, and I wanted to be sure they had such a good time. And when this lady walked in, her name was Louise, when Louise walked in, Mom was so happy to see her. She liked her a lot, and she said, "Sit down. Do you want to have dinner with us?" And then she looked at me and she said, "Are we going to have dinner?" And I said, "Yeah, I ordered pizza. Pizza was one of Mom's favorites." And she said, can she have dinner with us?" And I said, "Of course." I said, "Actually, I'm going to leave and you guys are going to have dinner." And Mom walked me to the door and said, "Well, you have a good time." She was happy to not have to do something with me. So often I think we don't think about that. Now, she loved to do things with me. She always wanted to go with me. She lots of days didn't want to stay at the day center. She wanted to go with me. So I'm not saying that it's always easy. I'm just saying that that was a start of me doing some things, and so once that worked out so well to go to my support group, I decided to do it the next week and the next week, and so we started just doing once a week. And so that's not only a way to look into the future, the things that you're going to need, because you do need to look into the future because you can't be there for them all the time. They are going to need to have more care than you might be able to provide. And so that was my first look at the future. But the next thing was the importance of taking care of ourselves. Now, I want to tell you that one of the things that made me the angriest, and if it makes you angry too, I won't be surprised, is I always had people who said to me, "Now, are you taking care of yourself?" And I always wanted to just honestly hit them, and I'm not a violent person. And I can remember the talk going on in my head, talking to myself. I warned you, I always did that. I remember the talk going on in my head. It was like, yeah, so of course I'm taking care of myself. You know, I have a full-time job, and I take care of my mom, and I do all this volunteer work, and feeling so sorry for myself. But it would make me so angry because they'd say, "Are you taking care of yourself?" And it's like, how and when am I supposed to do that? But it is important, and that's why people say it. They don't say it to make you angry. But I think that that's how we as caregivers feel. But it is important to take care of ourselves. I think of it every time I get on an airplane. It hits me, and I hear other people say this. This isn't real original. I hear it every time I'm on an airplane, for sure. When they talk about the oxygen mask, they always say, put the mask on yourself first, and then put it on the person you're with or the person that you're helping, whether it's a small child or someone that needs extra help. And that's the thing that you need to put in your mind. You need to put it on your mirror. You need to really think about it. And that's what good, well-meaning people are saying to you, to take care of yourself. And by taking care of yourself doesn't mean that you have to be self-absorbed. It doesn't mean that you need to increase the guilt. Caregivers, for some reason, always feel guilty. I'm not sure why. That just seems to be what we do. So taking care of yourself needs to be something that you can do. And you need to do it by starting small and start in the beginning. I can't tell you how many male caregivers I have worked with, and I have worked with many, many. They say it's females that are caregivers. Well, I've known a lot of male caregivers, and there's clearly a couple of them on this call for sure, who always love to play golf. And they gave up golf because they just couldn't figure out how to do it. Now, I love to go out with my friends. I love to go to the theater. There were a lot of things that I liked to do, and many of them I really could take Mom along, and she really enjoyed them. But the thing was that, like in the song, "Even Lovers Need a Holiday," sometimes I needed to do things without her, without the responsibility. And as I indicated, with Louise being with her in the evening, sometimes she needed to do some things without me too, even if she didn't know it and even if she couldn't articulate it. So it doesn't have to be something big. I laughed. I know a gentleman who couldn't go play golf anymore, and so his kids got him the Wii golf set, and so he said he actually enjoyed doing the Wii, and he did Wii golf. Now, I can't imagine, if you're really a golf player, and I certainly am not, that that would take the place. But it's some little thing that you can think about. So one of the things that I have recommended in helping people take care of themselves is start small and come up with one thing that you really, really like to do. Now, something that I love to do is have a cup of coffee and watch the sun come up. Now, that sounds like pretty early in the morning, but I'm an early morning person, and that's a fun thing for me to do. Now, fortunately, Mom liked to sleep late, and so I just started letting myself take the time to wake up a little bit earlier. And most of the time in Louisiana, almost the whole year, which I loved, having grown up and lived in Colorado for many years, you could actually take your cup of coffee and go outside and watch the sun come up. It's a little tiny thing, but one thing a day that you will do. The other thing is that we talked about, we started loving to have ice cream. So we had ice cream every night. So having the sun come up in the morning and having ice cream at night made us both feel good. Starting to get somebody to come in so I could go do something just once a week. Those little things will make a huge difference. And there's ways that you can figure out to do those things. So what I encourage you to do first is I encourage you to make a list of things that are important. And then there's ways to figure out how you can do those things. So that's really on the importance of taking care of ourselves. Another thing that we have talked about a lot since, and that I'm working on and hoping to be able to work on with actually some studies that are going to be done about caregivers, because as you know, with the baby boomers, there's going to be more and more caregivers. We really don't have anything on the horizon that looks like it's going to cure Alzheimer's anytime soon. There's going to be more and more of us that are going to be caregivers. There's going to be more and more, when I say us, I don't necessarily mean you or I because we're already there, but there are going to be more people that are going to be caregivers. So one of the things is that you really need to take care of your physical health. And even though sometimes it's not popular to say, you need to take care of your mental health. I still went for my annual physical. A lot of people stop going for their annual physical because they can't figure out how to get it done, or they just don't have the energy because they end up going to so many other doctor's appointments. So I went for my annual physical. I had put on weight. I had always had low blood pressure, and now my blood pressure had gotten to normal, which for me was high. Eventually, through the years of my mom living with me, I even got to high blood pressure. And my doctor knew that my mom was living with me. But neither she said to me, nor did I ask her, either one, and that's why I want to point this out to caregivers, if that could be the source of the weight gain, if that could be the source of the blood pressure. I told her that I wasn't sleeping very well. If that could be the source of that. We never discussed what was going on in my life that could be affecting that. Part of it, I believe, was because I didn't want to tell her that my mom was a burden, because I didn't want to think of her as a burden. But it's just not something that comes up. I do think that probably I needed to get on an antidepressant. I probably needed some therapy. There really are adult therapists that will help you work through some things. There are many of you, many, many caregivers, who end up taking care of a parent that they didn't have a good relationship with. There are spouses, and there are many ex-spouses. Just in my own work in the last 25 years, I have run into numerous ex-spouses that have ended up taking care of a spouse, someone that they've been divorced from. I have worked with kids whose families had been broken up, and their, let's just use their dad as an example, though I've seen it both with male and female, who had gone off and married someone else and had another set of children who they had been estranged from. There's even some movies about this, and one movie called The Savages, where they really hadn't been around them for years. And they came back, and they're taking the responsibility for taking care of someone. So a lot of times it's not in the best conditions like it was with my mom. And so you really need to get some professional help. A support group, absolutely. You want to do that from the get-go. But support groups aren't therapy, and there are people who really need some therapy to get through this. There are also people who didn't have a good relationship and always wanted something. So it's important, back there when I talked about talking about your fears, expectations are a huge one too. And all of those things are the things that you need to think about, like you really needed something else to think about. I'm going back to almost the things that would make you kind of angry. But those are the things you need to think about in taking care of yourself. So back to my doctor's appointments. I have no idea why I didn't ask the doctor to help me with some things. But there are some studies that are coming up now, and there are a few people that are really looking at the caregiver, because there's scary statistics for the caregivers. And I'm here to help you enjoy the time, so I'm not telling you to be scared, but your health can decline, and so that's just the reason for you to find ways to do little things and to have your own life, and to remember that the person who is impaired needs their own life too. So let's look from that to the positive approaches of making changes. Back to that list of the things that are really important. Find something that you can do together that's important. My mom loved the dog, and so walking the dog became something that we could do together, that she was always able to do, that she loved to do. She loved to dance. Now, I didn't know how to dance, didn't want to know how to dance, wasn't particularly interested in it. But we could put on dance music, and she would just dance and have the best time. And I think that this is something where it doesn't really matter how well you're doing things, but you can find the fun things, something that makes you laugh, something that makes you smile. We always watched Lawrence Welk on Saturday night. Now, I clearly remember as a kid thinking that Lawrence Welk was about the most boring thing that I had ever watched in my life. And I remember Mom and Dad really wanted us to be quiet when Lawrence Welk was on. I found that Lawrence Welk wasn't so bad as I got older. And because it was on the educational channel, what they really were doing, because Lawrence Welk has been dead for a really long time, is people who had been on the Lawrence Welk show, and maybe some of you already know this, maybe some of you don't, and I bet there are some of you who don't care, but they would have people who used to be on Lawrence Welk narrating and showing and talking about, and then they showed the reruns of the Lawrence Welk show. So there are just some simple things like that. There's old movies that you might have enjoyed that you can watch. I became, and there's a lot easier ways of doing it now, but we had a DVD rental store that was really close to us, and Mom and I would stop on the way home, and she liked to walk around in the store, and I would get DVDs. So on nights when I was tired, I could put on old DVDs. Sometimes I would watch them. Sometimes she would watch them. Sometimes we'd just sleep in front of the TV. But there are things like that that you can just enjoy. Figure out a way, if you like the outdoors, that maybe you can. I have some friends that have put glass in their screened-in porch, and they set out at night and just set in the screened-in porch. They can do it year-round. They put a little gas log kind of fireplace in there that just goes on with a flip of a switch because it's in a cold area. So there's a lot of positive approaches that you can look at changes when you have that list that basically tells you what's important, what you both enjoy. Look for something that you can do together. And just do one or two of those things each day. When you get to the point to where you feel like you just can't take it anymore, and if you're human, that happens really often, then you can just stop, throw yourself down and say, I don't know how we got to do this. Hopefully it'll make you laugh. And do some positive things. The last thing on the list, and of course we haven't covered every possible thing, but this is just a getting started and trying to wrap it up in a period of time, is some of the fear-busting techniques for those challenging days. And I know that you probably think a fear-busting technique needs to be something really great and really amazing. But it really isn't. It's really all the things that I've been talking about. I think what most of us fear the most is that we're not going to do a good job. That we're going to regret. That if we actually have somebody stay with them or have them stay somewhere, and there are a lot of respite programs available to do this, that might be their last day, or it might be their last Christmas, or it might be something might happen to them while we're gone. And you know that might happen, but do you know that can happen to anybody in any part of life? Just on the news a couple of weeks ago, there was a young man, I think he was in his late 30s, who was at the baseball park with his son. And this was on TV, I think, national everywhere, so probably all of you have heard about it. He was reaching up to catch the fly ball that he was catching probably for his son. And he leaned over and fell over, and he actually died. And people around had to take care of his son. So is that going to happen, and should you never go to the ballpark again, and should people not do things? Well, of course not. I mean, there are car accidents, there are disasters, there are awful things that can happen. But not taking care of yourself, not doing the things that are important, missing things because you're afraid that this will be their last day, those are the fears that you could have done in your entire life, and you... While those things come up, when they come up, you need to kick them out the back door. That's how you bust those things. When you get something that is so fearful, when you're starting to say the what ifs, and when you're starting to say the I should, I have to tell you that one of the best ways to do that is really go back to that self-talk again. And it doesn't matter if you think I'm crazy. It doesn't even matter if you start thinking you're crazy yourself. As a caregiver, you probably think that fairly routinely anyway, certainly I did. When you're having challenging days, stop what you're doing, figure out what's important. When those fears come in, and when people suggest those fears, you can really actively take those fears, say them back out loud, repeat them, say, ouch, that hurts, kick them out. Now, this is just the beginning, it's not the end. But I hope that somehow in this hour, and we're getting pretty close to the top of the hour, and I really think an hour is way more than amount of time that anybody can manage to listen. When you're going back to that, to all of the things that you're dealing with, I'm hoping that this just gives you a start of how to embrace some of the challenges. How to look at things, how to figure out how to start focusing on enjoying the time you have, doing the things that are fun, doing some things that are good for you, and figuring out ways that you can get some help. Now, it's been very, very quiet, so I think you always hope when you're on one of these teleseminars or teleconferences that, you know, somehow it didn't hang up a while ago and you just didn't figure it out, but I do have the ability to mute the lines. I didn't mute the lines, so I'm really wrapped up. I really think that I covered most of the things that I planned to talk about, and we have a little time left. So once again, all of your information that came in when you accepted the conference call will be something that they can send the recording back out to you. It will be in an email that you can then forward it. You can also keep it if you want to listen to it or if you want to share it with somebody else. And along with that, it's going to give you a new web, or a new, I guess it's really a landing page that I have that's called called Alzheimer's with no apostrophe. So it's you can do www.alzheimer's, and this will be written tomorrow too, so you don't have to write it down. AlzheimersCaregiverHelp.com. And on there it's going to talk about some other ways, if you're interested and if you want to click into that, that we can work together, and I'm going to start having a weekly meeting. I will still always have free things, but this is some other ways that I can add into my work to be able to help. And what it's really designed for is to actually address what your real concerns are, what you really want to talk about, what you're willing to talk about. You can always email me, and I'll always answer back emails, and I always have, and that will always continue to be something that I do for free. I am available on email. Don't always necessarily get it back the same day, but we'll get an answer back to you, and I've done that for years. So that's working with me. I'm going to open the lines now, and if anybody has any questions, if anybody would like to talk about anything, if anybody would like to address anything, and certainly, since you've heard me talk so long, if anybody wants to share a tip or anybody else wants to answer a question someone might have, I'm going to stop talking, though I will answer if no one else does, and let you ask some questions or do some wrap-up things, and we'll just kind of go from there. So again, thank you for being so attentive. I hope you're really here. I hope I'm really here. There's not a real good way of knowing that, and let's hear from you.
Yeah, Joe, this is Marshall from San Antonio.
Thank you.
That was a good presentation.
Thank you.
I would like to say that I'm no longer really a caregiver, even though sometimes I like to think of myself as a caregiver for the multitudes. My wife passed away last year from Alzheimer's, and I volunteer with the association. I have now for almost 2 years. And everything that you have said is what I tell people, not only in the support groups that I facilitate, but also in the care consultations that I do at our office when people happen to walk in or even on the telephone. I always tell people that the first thing that they need to do if they suspect any type of a dementia is, yes, to get those legal matters taken care of. That is so important. After that, once the diagnosis is made, then there's other things that need to be done, such as maybe even shopping for a skilled nursing unit or a memory unit. You know, now is the time to shop, not when your back is up against the wall. I love what I do in being able to talk with other caregivers and to at least share my story as much as I possibly can. And it makes me feel a lot better. And I have learned quite a bit from your books. I applaud you especially for the book, Don't Leave Mama at Home with a Dog, because it did show just how many mistakes a professional can make. So thank you so much for being you.
Thank you. Anybody else? Any questions?
Gosh, is anybody still there?
That was a lot of information, and I'm just kind of sorting it out.
I have a question. This is Helen. Is there a list somewhere of the financial and legal papers or entities that need to be addressed? I think I've addressed everything, but you never know.
Usually, because I don't give, you know, the legal advice and that kind of thing, and Marshall, you may be able to answer this. I think the Alzheimer's Association kind of has a checkoff list that you can use to be sure you can do it. You can also check with an elder law attorney in your area, and be sure it's an elder law attorney because there's all kinds of attorneys. Elder law attorneys will usually give a free seminar or one free conference or something that, that gives you the list of things that you need to be sure that you've taken care of. And it's even different in every state. So that's a hard thing to do, but I would always suggest that it's worth, you know, even if you ask for it as a Christmas present from family members or something, if there's a fee for it, and sometimes there are, to actually be sure that you've done those lists of things, because they're critically important. They can save you so much money and so much headache in the long run.
You're absolutely right, Joe. And actually, the first place to start would be the local Alzheimer's Association. We do have brochures. Every regional office also has resource lists that they can send you to show where the or who the elder law attorneys are. And so the association is really the first place to start.
And you can look those up at ELS.org and go by state right up in the right corner. It always gets you into all the memory walks and everything, which is kind of sometimes frustrating. But in the right corner of ALZ.org, it says find by state, and if you click on that, then it gives you a whole state map, and I mean a whole United States map, and then you can click on your state, and then you can put your zip code in, and it'll tell you where the closest office is.
Thank you.
I might also add that the ALZ.org website has a world of information.
It does.
And it is so useful, and I'll say this too, that support groups are probably the most important tool out there for a caregiver. I know for me, it got me through it, and if it hadn't been for the support group, I really and truly do not know what would have happened.
Okay, is there anything anybody else wants to add or ask? Or?
Hey, Joe, this is Paul.
Hi, Paul.
Hey, I just wanted to mention that when my I went talking to you, this is actually my mother-in-law who's
uh-huh.
afflicted by this, and she is in a, for everybody else's benefit, she's in a nursing home up in Meadville, Pennsylvania. But we had to take over because in 2009, my father-in-law passed away.
Mm-hmm.
So when we went there subsequent to my father-in-law's death, and he was in hospice care for cancer, and ostensibly my brother-in-law, who was alive at the time of it since his passed, he was, quote, taking care of things for mom and dad. But when we went there to start cleaning out, they were in, Westbury had independent living, so they were in a little bungalow there. But when Dad died, we had to move Mom up to the Alzheimer's unit. We knew that was all coming. That was going to be in the offing because, like I said, he had cancer and hospice care. Anyhow, but we found months worth of mail that had not been opened. And one of those things was the bill from John Hancock for her long-term care.
Mm.
We also found the policy cancellation notice because it hadn't been paid. Well, with the help from the staff, I called John Hancock, and we were able to get that reinitiated.
Wow.
We paid up the last bill, and we were able to get that reinitiated. And the primary reason was, in the interim, my mother-in-law's condition had not changed. So if anybody out there has, and here again, Dad was pretty well out of it because he was taking morphine for his cancer. Of course, my mother-in-law had nothing going, you know, she was not aware of anything. But, you know, we got help from the staff and were able to get that reinitiated. So if anybody else out there is in that same situation, they just shouldn't throw their hands up and say, gee whiz, I guess that boat has sailed.
Wow, that was very important information. Now, also, my long-term care insurance, and just because I've worked in aging most of my adult life, I have long-term care insurance. I'll give up fire insurance, car insurance. I'll never give up my long-term care insurance. That's how strongly I feel about it. But it has a place on it that my children get notified if anything happens to me, like non-payment of policy or address
right.
or anything like that. And they, during Hurricane Katrina, they both received notices from the long-term care insurance company, and they just actually sent those notices out, you know, in search of me because I guess they discovered, you know, they heard on the news that New Orleans, you weren't getting mail. And I, you know, I had auto bank draft and everything. So that's another thing that, you know, if you're a caregiver, that's something to look into to be sure that somebody is getting those notices too that helps prevent that. And that's wonderful news to know that a company actually let you pick it back up. I've always heard the stories where they didn't, so that's a wonderful thing. I love that one. I'm writing that one down.
Well, the other thing, and you mentioned two, an item there, actually both of them. Since I got long-term care for my wife and I, we signed up for through the bank to have that paid automatically every year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's a once annual payment, and so that's going to be taken care of for ourselves. And also, a lot of insurance companies, and a gentleman down in San Antonio, he knows this company, but USAA is my carrier, and actually here again, it's a John Hancock term written policy written through USAA, but they have on their for their clients. USAA does, you can have notifications sent out, like you said, if bills aren't being paid or so on and so forth, to other people so that things don't lapse all of a sudden just because, you know, I mean, Lord knows, my wife and I could be in a hospital for a car accident and be incapacitated for a long period of time. And like you said, the first thing to do is get your house in order.
Uh-huh.
Your legal and financial house in order, but that's another asset that you can take care of or that might be able to address these situations.
Okay, yeah. Is there anything else?
Yeah, I was just going to add to the gentleman that was just talking with you that so amazing what you learn by doing and learn actually through the University of Hard Knocks. Every time something bad happens, that should be a lesson learned.
Yes.
Right. Okay, well, thank you for your time. Like I said, if all works well and if I got this conference thing right, you'll receive your recording. You don't ever have to do anything with it if you don't want to. There's supposed to be MP3, which that translates for me as my grandson can put it on my iPod. So I don't get all that stuff. I'm very techno-challenged, but I have a lot of people around me that can help with that. And then you'll also get the landing page that, you know, talks about how I'm going to do some more like this. And I'll probably, at least quarterly, I'd say monthly, but sometimes my months get too busy, but at least quarterly, I'll definitely be doing a free teleseminar, and by then I'll know what subjects people want, so I'll make sure and keep them relevant to what's going on and what people want. So, again, I thank you for all of those of you who are listening in, and we'll be in touch if it's only through MP3, and you can always email me, and it's Joe, J-O, at alzheimersadvocate.com, or again, go to my website, and you can always send me a message through there, and Google on me sometimes. Sometimes I don't write that stuff down right, so if you just Google Joe Huey, you'll usually come right to my website. So thank you for your time. Thank you for all you do as caregivers, and go out there and embrace the day, embrace the challenges, and have a wonderful summer.
Joe, can I ask you one more question?
You sure can.
This is Marshall again. When can I expect your package? Because I really won't get you here next year.
I'm working on it. Next week, Marshall, I'll make a commitment, and then I'll get it done. I was working on all of this stuff first, though, so it's been in the works before, so I'll definitely get it out to you. Thank you.
Okay, now priority, not a problem.
Okay.
Thank you, Joe.
All right. Thanks.
Bye-bye.